Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Bob Glauber, remembering the little people. That's what we love about him. He remembers us little people. Our NFL insider from the New York Newsday. He's brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson. I-29 just south of the airport. The 2022s are rolling in. Go check them out. Get yours pre-ordered right now, as a matter of fact. Of course, inventory is a little bit tight. So make sure. Still the best selection you're going to find anywhere is at Worth Harley-Davidson. The best Harley-Davidson dealership anywhere around is Worth. Get your Harley-Davidson of your dreams right now. Go to WorthHarleyDavidson.com or see him just south of the airport on I-29. Let's welcome one Bob Glauber to the program. Bob, how are you?
I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? I'm good.
You're worth it.
That's the
next line. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Why the hell not? You're worth it. That's it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Get a little nuzzle there, a little post-commercial nuzzle.
Yeah, I'm proud of you, Bob. Nice
Thank
job.
You,
Very impressive. Nice Very impressive. Good to talk to you as always. Let's talk a little NFC because we talk a lot of AFC here, obviously, with the Kansas City Chiefs. So let's talk some NFC. Would you agree that it is a disaster if the Green Bay Packers don't at least make the Super Bowl? Not because in any one year somebody can be such a favorite that it's a disaster if they don't make it, but because this may very well be, although they're snuggling and playing nice with each other, the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, but this could be the last year for him. And if the entire Aaron Rodgers' tenure in Green Bay nets one Super Bowl, that's a disaster. Therefore, not making the Super Bowl this year, disaster.
It would be problematic. Disaster. I reserve disaster for loss of property, that kind of stuff. But listen, in football terms, it would be a disaster. Yes, because they've done everything so far. I mean, Rodgers has had a transcendent season again. He's probably the favorite. Although I think it's pretty close between him and Brady, I would think Rodgers would be the favorite to win MVP. And this team has done everything imaginable to put itself in perfect position to get the number one seed, to have everything go through Green Bay. Now, it's not worked out before a number of times in Green Bay, not only with Aaron Rodgers, but with Brett Favre. So there's quite a bit of pressure on Green Bay. I don't think they're going to be playing as loose as they have been now. And it's not a matter of playing with house money. They got to get this thing done, because especially coming off last year where they just, they – I don't want to say they choked, but they did not cover themselves in glory toward the end of that year, to the end of that game against Tampa last year in Green Bay. They didn't.
Well, no, they didn't. They lost.
They lost in a bad fashion. Rodgers should have run it in. LaFleur should have. I think he should have kicked a field goal. I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but he did not have a great game. Rodgers should have run that ball in toward the end, and it was not good.
Yeah, I'm glad we can come to that conclusion now a year later, Bob.
why are you picking on me, man? Why is everybody always picking on me?
No, but in football, so based on that, then did you talk yourself all the way around to agreeing with me that it's a disaster?
Absolute unmitigated disaster it would be.
Well, I mean, you tell me, like, hey, here's a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Word salad. Yes, it would be bad. I mean, they got everything all set up. A Hall of Fame quarterback who might not be there next year. But although I think, especially if he wins the Super Bowl, I think he'll be back. How do you close the door on Aaron Rodgers if you're the Packers? Absolutely, shoots his way out of town, which he could.
Let me tell you something. I'll have more respect for him if he's gone. If he's back, he's just a blowhard drama queen that needs attention.
He realizes that if he gets traded somewhere, he's never going to have it as good as he's got it in Green Bay, just from a football perspective.
Jeff Chedia said, You know, Jeff, he said on our 2D podcast, which we'll do tonight at 9, far, you know, 10 Eastern, way beyond your bedtime, Bob. But, you know, you can catch it on the podcast in the morning. I know you're a subscriber, and we appreciate that. Let me just say this.
Yeah.
Jeff Chedia made the point. He said, have you ever been up to Green Bay and seen how they cover the Packers? And I said, no, I haven't. He said, it's like a college deal. He said, like, the reporters up there can't even begin to be negative, or they will just be absolutely bombed. He said, everybody up there lobs softballs. He didn't go to that point. I guess he didn't say that. He just said, it's like a college town. It's all the coverage has to be pro Packers. First of all, do you agree with that?
I mean, Tom Silverstein is not all hearts and flowers when he covers the Packers. Rob Domofsky of ESPN.com, he's not, you know, they went after Rodgers with the vaccine stuff.
But I think he realized real quick that he was getting it a lot worse outside of Green Bay than he was getting it in Green Bay, right? Like I put it this way. I can't remember who I was talking to, if it was Brian D., but I said, you know, where are the fans around Aaron Rodgers? I said, is it a little bit like the way San Francisco fans were around Barry Bonds? Yeah, he's a jerk, but he's our jerk, and we're going to cheer for him. And he said, yeah, there's a little bit of that that's in effect there. And if you go someplace else, like, where's he going to go? Like that he's going to get that kind of treatment?
Right. He would get very good treatment in Denver unless he – if it doesn't get it done, you know, if the team doesn't improve dramatically, he would be, you know, welcomed like Peyton Manning.
Well, but that's just it. Like, if you go somewhere else, you're there to win a championship, and he has won one and only played for one. Yet in Green Bay, it's not like, well, this guy's kind of a failure, right? Let me tell you, not that the player's a failure, but was the tenure of Dan Marino in Miami successful?
I mean, the guy was a first ballot Hall of Fame player. It wasn't successful from a team standpoint. They only went to
that's
one
what I'm
Super
talking
Bowl.
About,
right?
But people hold the quarterback accountable, right?
Yeah, but I don't think people look at Dan Marino and say, "Oh, played in only one Super Bowl, failure." I really don't. And it's interesting. I'm glad we're talking about that because
you live in a very secluded community.
Are you serious?
Because
Dan Marino. Is a freak. He was awesome. But it wasn't his fault that they won championships. They didn't have a running game and didn't have a defense, you know, enough.
Right. I know, and I'm not saying that, but everybody considers it like, listen, when Patrick Mahomes got here and the Chiefs went to the Super Bowl, it was like, you know, even after, like, 17 he hadn't played, 18 he plays and gets to the AFC Championship game, and then in 19 he goes to the Super Bowl, and I took, I don't know how many calls of people going, well, we don't want this to be a Dan Marino or Aaron Rodgers career. Right? Like, that's how it was defined.
Okay.
And they're not saying that because they're calling those positives.
Well, listen, I think everything is looked at in different terms in this sport because there's team success and there's individual success. Barry Sanders was one of the great running backs of all time who did not win a playoff game. Is that a failed
quarterback's
career?
Different. Quarterback's no. Different. Come on. Quarterback's
okay.
Different. You know
well,
it is.
Okay. All right. Who else are we talking about? You know, Elway might have gone to the Hall. He would have gone to the Hall of Fame without those two at the end, but he was looked on as, well, he got to three Super Bowls, and it's the team. It wasn't his fault that they didn't win.
Yeah, but his stature in the game went way up once he did finally cash for two at the end. Like it was considered somewhat of a failure that he hadn't won. I mean, I'm not trying to sentence the guy to death, but let's just call it what it is. It's a disappointment when a guy's as good as Aaron Rodgers has been at throwing the football and they've only got one Super Bowl. Good Lord, this should be I agree. And then we move on and we spent 15 minutes about it.
Listen to me. I think the difference between Aaron Rodgers and say a Dan Marino, I think Aaron Rodgers has had better teams around him consistently compared to Dan Marino. And I think that's a fair point, and that's a meaningful point. You know, Marino couldn't do it himself because there was not enough around him. Rodgers, you know, I think his legacy, if he does not get to and win a Super Bowl, at least get to one, would be, hey, you know what? That guy had really good teams, and he didn't get it done. So I think there is a difference there. That's all.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yes. So now that we've done all that, are they going to get to the Super Bowl?
I haven't gotten to the Super Bowl. Yeah. Sure. I think they will. I think they're a well-rounded team. They run the ball like crazy. They run the ball really well. The offensive line is playing great. Rodgers is at the top of his game. And the defense, unlike many we've seen in Green Bay over the years, is really much more reliable. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't have some flaws in that defense. I think they can be kind of pushed around a little bit here and there. But I think when you're looking on paper, this team, you know, it's the number one seed for a reason. And I look at it as another Tampa Green Bay championship match.
So you do like the Bucks? You don't think the Bucks are too banged up to move on?
No, I think they're going to be healthy enough. I think, is Fournette back this week? If he's not back this week, he'll be back next week if they can get past Philly. Evans is okay. Look, they don't have Antonio Brown, but you know, good riddance at this point as far as the locker room goes. Defensively, they seem to be getting better. I believe Levante David is going to be back. So, you know, their stout linebacking core is very good. And the secondary certainly played much better last year in the playoffs than it did in much of the regular season. So I still look at this team as pretty loaded. Not having the bye is going to hurt. But, you know, there's only one team with a bye in each conference. So, I don't think it'll hold Kansas City back from getting to the Super Bowl, and they don't have a bye.
I think the Packers are going to go to the Super Bowl, but I think anybody in the NFC is capable of going except the Eagles.
That's fair. San Francisco's got a bit of a tough road. LA is a little bit flawed. Arizona, I don't see Arizona getting on a roll to go.
You don't think they can?
No,
they were God's gift at one point. They were the last undefeated team.
What's happened? What's happened? What's their record in the last 6 weeks? Bad.
Curtis looked it up.
But I know Curtis.
Everyone thinks you got to have momentum going in. Curtis looked it up, and it actually that's not true.
Your
December record is not an indicator of how you're going to perform in the postseason.
Is Kurt there or no?
I'm here.
Hello, Kurt.
Hi, Robert.
How was the nap?
I was not taking a nap. That'll be later.
No, I think it was something else that was going on.
Huh?
What's with your voice?
I have a little bit of a cold. A little sinus cold.
Even deeper than normal.
It's even deeper than normal.
Oh,
baby.
A little tougher to do reads.
What did you want to ask him, Bob?
What did you want to know, Bob?
Seren, this is entertainment as well. Are you new here? Curtis, what was the Cardinals' record in their last six games? They were 10-0, correct?
The Cardinals'
last
record? No, they weren't 10-0. I think they were 7-0.
7-0.
The Cardinals' record in their last down the stretch, they have lost 4 of 5. They were 10-2. They were 7-0 and 10-2. And they've lost 4 of 5.
Okay, Seren, I'm an idiot for suggesting they're flawed. Sorry.
No, I'm fine with it. I think the Cardinals are stronger than you're giving them credit for. I mean,
okay.
That's all.
They're playing the Rams on the road. They waxed the Rams on the road early in the season, and that was a bit of an upset on an early streak that they had, which was good. But they have just not they have been a mess the last.
I just look at the odds makers, and the odds makers have them as just a 4-point dog. I don't think that's a team that's like just falling apart.
No, okay, but right.
But it's all right. Listen,
I
don't have them
in this one. I like the Rams in this one. I don't like the Rams in Green Bay.
Okay. All right, let's so you like the Rams in this one. Who do you like in the Cowboys and the 49ers? And is that a bigger game for each head coach than people realize? Right? Because afterwards, whoever loses is going to get bombed.
Yep. I think McCarthy would get bombed a little bit more than Shanahan.
Because Shanahan is the golden boy and nobody, for whatever reason, even though he has a losing record almost every year, nobody ever complains about him.
But he got things together. There were some quarterback issues there. They started playing better, and they pulled out that game last week. They, you know, if he loses.
Wait a minute, quarterback issues. You mean with the guy that he went out and traded for and got?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And he got hurt. Remember, he got hurt? And yeah. He's, listen, Jimmy G is an incomplete quarterback. Is that news? Right? He's not perfect. And he can throw really a bonehead turnover, but he can also make some throws that make you say, wow, pretty good.
Is it because Andy Reid was fat? Like, how come Andy Reid got bombed in Philadelphia and he went to four conference championship games and he had, in his 14 years, I think he had, you know, in his 13 years after his first season, he had what, Curtis, if I'm not mistaken, 11 winning seasons. He had one at the end and he had a 6-10 season there. Maybe he had an 8-8 in there. Maybe it's like 10 winning seasons or something.
Yep.
And Andy Reid was a boob when he came to Kansas City, who couldn't figure out the clock and doesn't know how to win a big game. When does that kick in with Mike Shanahan?
Well, Mike's done, but Kyle.
I mean.
Yeah.
Shut up, Smarty. Listen, come on.
When you come,
I'm under
at
a
me,
tremendous amount of pressure here, Bob. Just work with me.
When you come at me, I'm coming at you. Okay, buddy. Okay, buddy.
Pal.
Okay. So I think Kyle Shanahan is a good, solid coach. He got to a Super Bowl, and he's got to stand the test of time. And, you know, Trey Lance is going to determine whether that is, you know, that's a big decision that he made. And I think they're a little bit nervous that that decision might not work out. But in the meantime, he's got a chance to pull off an upset. But if he loses, it's like, well, you know, they got back. You know, he got back to the playoffs. So, you know, he's in good shape. It was a tough division. And they survived. So even if they keep it close against Dallas, I think there's more on the line for McCarthy, because, you know, he had everything going his way. He had a quarterback in Dak Prescott who was healthy all year. He's a potential comeback player of the year winner, although I think Burrow probably gets that. The defense, adding Micah Parsons and particularly adding Dan Quinn, has been magnificent overall, especially compared to last year. They were a disaster. So, you know, and the expectation level in Dallas, for whatever reason, it's America's team, it's Jerry Jones, he's a big talker, there is a much, much bigger burden of expectation on Mike McCarthy than there is right now on Kyle Shanahan.
Well, it's the expectations have been built by giving big contracts to Zeke Elliott and to Dak Prescott, and then the fact that your boss is your boss,
yeah,
right? Your boss picked the groceries. Means he ain't blaming him, so everybody knows it, that it's going to be on McCarthy. I mean, I get it, and McCarthy has struggled on, you know, the clock and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to make excuses for that, but I just think it's amazing. Mike McCarthy won a championship. Mm-hmm. He didn't just go there. He won it. And Mike McCarthy's a doofus, and Kyle Shanahan is still boy wonder.
All that being said, I am very curious about one particular aspect of this game, and that is I want to see how Zeke Elliott does. Because, you know, he was a prisoner of his own ego last week in demanding that he play against Philadelphia in a meaningless game. And I get it. Mike McCarthy wanted some momentum going into the playoffs. They had a poor game the week before. But that guy wanted to get to his 1,000 yards, and it took him into the third quarter to get there, and he got beat up some more. Zeke Elliott in a 17-game season was beat up, and he does not have a week off in the playoffs. That is intriguing to me. And if it shows that he should have been given more time off, maybe not play last week, I think McCarthy really runs a risk of getting second-guessed on that one. There's no way he could have kept him off the field, I guess, because Zeke is just, you know, he's a demanding player and he's a highly paid player, and all he would have had to do is go to Jerry Jones and say, hey, I got to play, man. I got to get my 1,000 yards. So he was going to play one way or the other, but and then, great. Okay, you got 1,000 yards in 17 games. But what does it do for you for the playoffs? You've got potentially, you know, 3 games to play to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, listen, I think Tony Pollard might be a better back right now anyway.
He might be. He is the better back. He's quicker, shiftier, and gets through the hole much, much faster. He is.
All right, let's take a break. I want to talk coaching with Bob Glauber, our NFL insider, the coaching moves that are out there. David Culley got fired, of course. Why? Absolutely, given every opportunity to succeed, and he just couldn't take it and win. Brian Flores was fired. Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. And then it took 2 days of meetings for Joe Judge to get fired. What is going on? The owners, are they as dumb as I think they are right now? We'll find out if Bob agrees next here in the program.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Cowboys and 49ers will meet in the playoffs for the eighth time this weekend. What is the most common matchup in NFL postseason history?
Wait, the Cowboys and Niners have met eight?
This will be the eighth time this weekend.
And where does that rank?
Now, so what is the most common
NFL? I know, but I'm asking where that one ranks.
That is second by one game.
Second by one game.
Colts Patriots?
Nope.
Mm. Is it an old school rivalry?
Is it what, Bob?
Old school rivalry?
No, Bob. It's the Jags and Texans.
Yeah, it's
yes. It's old teams. It's the most ever.
Primarily, these teams would have met in the 1970s.
That's what I meant.
Most of them.
Steelers,
yeah.
Raiders?
Nope.
Petro? I am going to punch you in the face when I see you. I mean, right?
They have met recently in the playoffs.
That's going to happen. What was the first one?
By the way, are you going to punch me in the face when you come here for the Chiefs Raiders AFC Championship game?
Won't be there. I'm not covering games on the road until the Super Bowl.
Okay. Good to know.
Apologies. Are you going to the Super Bowl?
It's a
You don't know?
Probably no. I don't think so.
Oh, really?
It was trending that I would be going if the Chiefs were there until this latest wave of everybody.
I'm thinking, I'm going to go to Radio Row. I'm going to hang out. I'm going to just blow into people's faces all afternoon.
You're
like, why
right?
not? I mean, what the hell?
Ridiculous.
So Kurt, did you give us the all-time leader or the second?
The Niners and Cowboys is the second most. Will be once they get to this Sunday. They will be the eighth time or Saturday.
Okay.
These two teams have met nine times. Most recently in 2018.
Oh, wow.
They met for the first time in, I believe, 1975.
75 to 18.
It's got to be AFC, right?
Nope.
Oh, it's got to be NFC then.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
you sussed that out there.
Because you don't know when the next time I see you is. But the next time I see you, you will be punched.
Good to know. Good to know.
That's a good one. I don't know. What is it, Kurt?
Cowboys, Rams, nine times. Most recently in
2018. Wow. Never would have gotten
18.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah, I wasn't trending that way either.
Yeah. Roman Gabriel.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, where Bob may get arrested sometime for an open container at the original at 47th and Mission. 119th and Strangline, or 117th and Row. The wonderful Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. I'm getting Joe's this weekend. That was just decided. I need me some Joe's. It's going to get cold again this weekend, so some wonderful barbecue sounds absolutely fantastic to me. We had some burnt ends for the game on Sunday. My buddy Sean got burnt ends at Joe's, so that was absolutely fantastic. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, check it out right now. Or I guess the game is on Saturday. I was just thinking, how did he get it on Sunday? Because we've done the spreads, and they'll make it up for you, and you take it home. But no, the game is on Saturday. That's why I had it. There you go. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Send it anywhere in the country at joeskc.com. Bob, Eric Bieniemy did not like our line of questions as we asked him today. You know, in the 9 minutes a week for 17 weeks or, plus playoff games that he's available before he's then sent into hiding in the off season where no one can talk to him until the cycle starts back up in training camp. He didn't like it. He said, "We got a game against the Steelers. What are we talking about here?" And I actually said to him on the press conference, I said, "Coach, you've got a game against the Steelers. the NFL has things that are bigger than actually this game, and one of them you're at the heart of. I said good or bad, right or wrong, because of your resume, you're at the tip of the spear of African-American head coaches getting hired, and he just doesn't want to talk about it at all. And he was very nice. He said, I know you're not harassing me. I said, I'm not trying to harass you. He said, I know you're not, and I'm not trying to be a jerk. And I said, I know you're not, but, you know, I wanted him to answer, how many interviews has he been on? And he wouldn't. He said, well, it's wild card week. I can't go on an interview. I said, they had a new rule that the last 2 weeks of the year you could be interviewed. You know, like, what's your thought on the rule? And if you don't mind, I said, you can refuse to, you know, you can decline to answer, but how many interviews have you had? And he didn't decline to answer. He just didn't answer it and started talking about the Steelers. I mean, you know, I don't think that's, I don't know, is that the right way to go about getting a coaching job with him? Maybe it is. Maybe he's been told, listen, if you make it a big issue, that no one's going to touch you. And I feel like that must be what he's been told.
I don't know what he's been told, but I honestly don't blame him for reacting that way. I really don't. Because what's in it for him right now to lobby? He doesn't need to lobby for himself. His resume is out there. He's been interviewed a million times, and he hasn't gotten the job.
Okay.
And
okay, I agree. Hang on. Don't move off that subject, because I want to examine that for a minute. I agree. I understand why he wants to talk about the Steelers. I think he's been told don't do it, probably by smart people that know what the owners want, and I understand the tactic. But I didn't. But it's fine. You can be like, I don't want to get into how many times I've interviewed. But as far as the new rule goes, yeah, I think it's probably pretty good. We actually have more time, you know, in the regular season. It's effective. Or no, I don't really like the new rule because I'm busy during that time, you know. Or you know, it would be ideal if they would just not let anyone hire anyone until the end of the season. You know, like, give me some input on it.
Right.
But instead, if you hear any audio now of it, if you go listen to that audio as a national guy writing about Eric Bieniemy, you're going to be like, well, hell, he won't answer that guy's question. Like, he you know, is he? And if you hear him do it every year, it's almost like he doesn't, it can come across like he doesn't know how to answer the question, which is not a strengthening, you know, doesn't strengthen his position as a candidate.
How do you answer the question? Really?
I don't really like it.
Often. Okay, I have opinions about the two-week rule, and I was there when they announced it at the owners' meeting in Dallas, the day before COVID just absolutely blew up on everybody. So, they announced this rule, like if the coach knows, the current coach knows he's not going to be back, you either fire a coach or inform a coach that he's not going to be back next year. You are allowed to interview candidates during the last 2 weeks of the regular season. It is an effort to get, you know, more candidates, especially diverse candidates, to at least get in front of owners via Zoom. Okay, that's like, I was like, that does really nothing, because, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, you had in Jacksonville, you know, because Urban Meyer blew up. Right, you had that opening, and I think they wanted to talk to Dan Quinn. Maybe they did. Maybe they talked to Leftwich. Okay, fine. I think the more important time in this hiring cycle is at the end. Is at the end of the playoffs. They closed the loophole back in the 90s when Jimmy Johnson was dominating the NFL. Now, you gotta just bear with me on this history part because it's important. So
because then I want to come back, because you totally ignored my question.
Okay, what's the question?
My point is, like, you just answered the 2 week thing, and like, I don't know why he can't answer that. Like, I keep asking you about him. I keep asking you about him and answering about the 2 week rule and about interviews, and you go on and say, well, he shouldn't talk about getting hired. Right. Well, what about those two things specifically? If you can answer that question, why can a sitting offensive coordinator not answer the question and go, you know what, the rule really, it doesn't have any teeth. It doesn't work. Why can't he do that? Why did I watch a game with the Tampa Bay Bucks where they said both coordinators had talked to them about being interviewed by the Jaguars, and that there's not a rivalry there, and each of them have supported the other one in their candidacy as a candidate for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They acknowledge that they've been interviewed by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you know what? Their heads did not pop off.
Okay.
Neither one of their heads came exploding off. I that's my point. Is him, and the way he handles it, is that part of why he's not getting the job?
I don't think so. I'm not in the room with owners who pass over Eric Bieniemy. I'm just wondering out loud, and I'm not trying to stir the pot, and I'm not trying to, you know, be the woke guy. But if Eric Bieniemy was the right-hand man of Andy Reid, one of the great coaches of all time, and Andy Reid was singing his praises, if he's a white guy, is he more attractive as an NFL coaching candidate? I don't think it's a stretch to say yes. Is it?
Well, that's my point. Is he more attractive as a candidate? I don't know. I don't know. Only my assumption is yes, because these are old white guys. And I think the older generation is not as far along as the younger generation. I think that's the fact. These are, you know, old guys that come from a time where I don't think 31 old white guys are as hip to what, you know, progress as, you know, 16 young white guys and 16 people of color. I don't. So, like, I just think that's reality. But you know, to me, what I want to know is what's wrong with him. And if you can't even talk about, if you can't even have a conversation with the man about does the rule work, who have you interviewed with, you know, who have you talked to, then how can you get to the bottom of what's wrong with him? Right? Because I think there's, you know what I think? I think there's something that they don't like. I've said this. You and I have talked about it before. You talked about how Tony Dungy, I don't think Tony Dungy is particularly good on TV. Sweetheart of a guy, everybody says, but I don't think he's very good on TV. And you said the word was that he didn't interview well. And that's why it took a long time for him to finally get the Bucs job. I don't think Eric Bieniemy interviews well. I don't think he's particularly good at handling our questions. He used to be awful. He's much better now. But I think he probably doesn't interview well. I don't know why that has to be a secret. I don't get it. You're right. I don't think it's because he's black. I think it's because he doesn't call plays and he's not as dynamic as Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy. And yes, I think part of it is they were white and white owners who hired both of those guys. It's easier for them to feel comfortable with white guys. I definitely think that played a role in it. Now, was it 2% or 25%? I don't know. But I also think that there's something in Eric Bieniemy's resume or in his character or in the way he presents himself that he's not getting jobs. I think it's probably mostly legit reasons. But if you can't even talk about a rule, then you can never get to what the legit reason is. And so he becomes the poster child of, like, look how they won't hire Eric Bieniemy. And I think that's unfair in and of itself, too, right? If there is some flaw in his coaching abilities, then that should be known.
Well, you know, this is a complicated subject. It's a complicated situation with Eric Bieniemy, because he right now is the guy. He is the ultimate example of the what you think is the most prepared guy who's getting passed over continuously. Yeah. How many is it?
Right.
Eight times? Nine?
That's why I think, why? What would be so wrong with owners having to, like, you want a real Rooney Rule with teeth? Make every coaching interview have to have a public sentiment, a public statement, a public release as to why a guy didn't get the job.
Well, I mean, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So don't even. It's just not going to happen. They don't want to be beholden to that.
Yeah. Okay. I know it's not going to happen. But would that not solve it? We would know what the flaw is in Eric Bieniemy if they had to put a one sheet out. Listen, didn't really like his answer to this. Didn't like this. Didn't like that. Then you would know. And then, by the way, Eric Bieniemy would know and could go fix whatever it is that's keeping him from getting a head coaching job.
All right. Look, maybe the guy's got to get a better person. Maybe it's because he's the front-facing person of a franchise and a coach. It's a very big part of being an NFL coach. It is. But the bigger part of being an NFL coach is winning friggin' football games. And the guy has done everything possible outside of just leaving the organization to strike out as an owner somewhere else in college or wherever. But, you know, the guy wants a shot in the pros. He's not getting. Now I'm going to go back to a couple of years, right? And this is from my experience. The Giants hired Joe Judge 2 years ago, right? So Joe Judge was an unknown coach and probably was in over his – and certainly was in over his head, you know, when he coached 2 years, two bad years. So, but forget that for a moment. It's like, what's the process? So that he blew him away in the interview. He was perfect, man, and he gave a great press conference. He had everybody going. We're going to be tough. We're going to reflect the people of New York City and New York metropolitan area. Blue collar. We're going to punch you in the face for 60 minutes. Everybody was all pumped up. And then the guy, you know, went 6-10 and then 4-13. Done. Well, okay, the day that he was introduced to the New York media, he had a great press conference. We got a chance to talk to the owners after, and John Mara. I asked him about this, you know, the issue of diversity hiring. Now, he's on the diversity committee in the NFL. I go, you know, okay, I get it on Judge. You liked him, but what about Bienemy? He has everything in terms of experience. He goes, oh, I love Bienemy. Really? He says, yes, I absolutely loved him. He was really good. He interviewed very well. Very impressed with him. Now, John Mara was persuaded by the interview done by Joe Judge, but he was also persuaded by the vote of confidence that he got from Bill Belichick about Joe Judge. Now, he doesn't have that kind of relationship with Andy Reid. Don't know if he reached out to Andy Reid. But that's just one small sample of what the situation is out there. So you look at it now, 2 years later, Eric Bieniemy was passed over by a special teams coach in New England who, excuse me, won 10 games in 2 seasons. Well, what now? Now, this time the Giants are not going to hire the coach themselves. They're going to get a general manager first, and then they're going to let that person hire the head coach. I assume Bieniemy will be on the list. There will be others on the list, but this will be an interesting test case.
I mean, please tell me you're going to go tomorrow and say you liked him last time. He's won a Super Bowl since. Coached in another one. How can this not be your choice?
Well, they got to get the general manager first.
Oh, come on, Bob. That's laughable. That is an excuse made to just give plausible deniability why you can't hold them accountable. Period, end of discussion. First of all, it's dumb. The general manager should no longer be the proprietor of who is the coach, right? Like, Clark Hunt figured that out. Like, he went, all right, I'm not just leaving it to the G. He went, okay, Carl Peterson, it's time for a change there. And then he brought in another Carl Peterson. He went, no, this doesn't work with Scott Pioli just having total say. I got to be on top of the coach. And he went out and he hired Andy Reid. Like, the coach is more important than the GM. And it's great. I love watching your New York team suck. I do. And I love the fact that the Giants are going to continue to suck because they've had plenty of success and the Yankees win everything. And I love watching the Knicks suck. And I'm glad that the Giants are going to suck with the Knicks. Okay. Enjoy it because this is stupid. It's dumb to go, I'm going to hire a GM if he's actually going to do it. It's just dumb. Like, it's not the way to go about getting things done. You hire the head coach and the coach and the GM report to you, and you expect them to act like adults and figure it out, and when it doesn't, you figure out which one to fire. That's how it should work.
Well, they had success many years ago when they hired George Young as general manager, who hired the coach, and that franchise turned around.
And Curly Lambeau had success running the ball 94% of the time.
Look,
we're not doing that anymore.
I'm telling you, That's the impact that had. And then they did it differently. You know, he went after Dave Gettleman. He focused on Gettleman from the start. There was no thought to hiring anybody else as general manager because the Giants wanted somebody who they knew. And they got spoiled by front office stability. They hired Gettleman. It was a disaster. 4 years of going so far backwards that this team is probably 3 years away from anything. You know, that's the impact that he and then they failed at identifying the proper coach because they were not hoodwinked, but they were just bowled over by this great talker, Joe Judge, who, and that's his strong suit, is talking. You know, his team was not prepared.
Listen, when you go to a press conference and say this is not a clown show, your strong suit is not talking, and the Maras were hoodwinked by a guy who's not that bright. Let's call it what it is, Bob. I mean, they're a boob fest. They are a joke. It is a clown show. The Giants are a clown show. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, when 2 years from now we have this conversation about their next white coach being fired, we can, you know, we can come back and like, you know, I can tell you why the Titanic was in the waters it was in and how an iceberg forms and why it's not good for ships to run into it. The bottom line is, you know, they screwed up.
Yes, they have screwed up three times in a row. Four, if you count, you know, him ushering Tom Coughlin into retirement. But that, but the problem was the personnel. It's just not, it's not a good team. There's not enough good players. And they stopped getting good toward the end of Jerry Reese's term as general manager. They got very good with George Young. He drafted Hall of Fame players like Lawrence Taylor.
I don't want to make this a I'm more interested in the coaching and the hiring than like the Giants, you know, in their history of their
no,
but, I, but my point
is show, but this is a, you know, you're talking about a clown show of a team that has won four Super Bowls in the last, you know, few decades. And like that's
more than
most teams.
The last 10 years, it's a clown show. Since the end, whenever Coughlin's era ended, it's a clown show.
Okay, fine. But you, I mean, that's sports, right? What organization? The Chiefs were a clown show before Andy Reid got there. They were a clown show. Does that make Clark Hunt a terrible owner?
No.
No,
but nobody's arguing that point. You're arguing the point. It was a clown show here. And I can tell you, Scott Pioli's hiring was not a horrible decision. He was a three-time executive of the year. It just didn't work. There's a reason to do it. But at the end of the day, was it a successful hire? No, it was an unmitigated disaster.
Well, that's what it was with Dave Gettleman. But it's not. But it doesn't mean that the organization and the owners are clowns. Sports, man. It's hard. It's not an ordinary business. This ain't IBM. Third quarter, we're selling more computers. We're doing great. This is like people and sports and talent, and it's hard to be good. It is.
Well, I think when you say to a Hall of Fame writer that we really liked the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he then goes out and wins a Super Bowl and wins a conference championship in back-to-back years after you passed over an offensive coordinator for a special teams coach who then comes in and is a train wreck, I don't know how that's not your first call. He was either lying to you 2 years ago and just saying that to be like, oh, yeah, we were this close to hiring an African-American coach. He was either completely full of it then, or he's completely full of it now.
Well, we're about to find out.
I don't know
where Bieniemy stands, but I don't think they're going to. They're not going to conduct coaching interviews until they get their general manager.
Okay, and maybe that'll work well for Bieniemy because maybe it'll take all the way to the Super Bowl and he'll have a chance.
Can we get to the point about what the end of the cycle where Bieniemy has gotten hurt? That's where, because they can't hire until after they're done. So 2 years in a row now, Bieniemy hasn't been done until early February. But they used to have it, and I was going with the Cowboys thing, they used to have it where you could sign with a team. You could reach an agreement. Wanstead left for the Bears, and North Turner left for Washington. They did it while they were in the playoffs. They shut that door. I think they got to reopen that door. If they're not going to wait until after the Super Bowl, then reopen that door and let them agree to terms before the Super Bowl.
That would help
Eric Bieniemy, and that would help other African American, you know, coaches. You know, if teams can like get rid of the excuse that we couldn't wait, we just couldn't wait until after the Super Bowl. That's nonsense. That's crap. You know, you wait for talent. Wait for good people. If you got a good person. Wait it out. 2 weeks in friggin' January and February is not going to make a difference in terms of the overall scheme of things.
No, absolutely. If the Spurs can wait 2 years on David Robinson, you can wait 3-4 weeks on the right head coach. There's no doubt about it. How is Brian Flores, and I got a break here so quickly, how is Brian Flores and David Culley fired? How are they fired? How with a straight face? You would think just off knowing the climate you wouldn't do that. How do you do that? How do you fire a guy who's had two winning seasons in a row for the Dolphins. How do you fire David Culley, who had a team that everybody thought was going to pick first or second in the draft, and he wins four games and takes the number one seed in the AFC to the wire, develops a third-round pick as a quarterback. How do you fire that guy?
Well, there's talk that he's going to go after Flores, but be that as it may, I think if Flores were still employed, David Culley still would have been fired, right? I mean, it's bad. You know, there's one black coach in the NFL right now, and that's Mike Tomlin. One, and I'm not saying, only hire a black coach because that's the thing to do and make it more fair. I'm saying there is racial bias probably in all of us to some degree. So they're trying to level the playing field. The Rooney Rule is designed to do that. In the best case scenario, you don't need a rule. You shouldn't want to have a rule. I don't say, hey, you should only get a job because you're black. You should get a job because you're good, but it should be an open process for the whole thing, for the whole pipeline of things. You know, I go back, you know, Marion Motley, and this is really going back because he broke the color barrier in pro football. It's part of the
book. You wrote a great book on it, Bob.
Right?
But he
tried to break the color barrier in coaching. He wanted to be a head coach the worst way. He once coached a women's team, semi-pro team, to show the Browns that he could coach. He never got an opportunity. He played with Otto Graham. Graham loved him. Graham couldn't give him a job in Washington because he worked for George Preston Marshall, who was the biggest racist in pro sports. Couldn't get a job. He begged. In 1965, the guy wrote a letter to the Cleveland Plain Dealer and accused the Browns of being racist, that they wouldn't hire him. And he talked later in life. He says, "Well, I could play for them, but they wouldn't let me, you know, coach for them." You know, that's 1965. There were zero black assistant coaches back then. The first black coach in NFL history was in 1921. It was Fritz Pollard. He coached 1 year for the Akron Pros. The next black head coach in the NFL, it was 1989, and it was Art Shell with the Raiders. It's a problem. There's nothing wrong with saying it's a problem because it is a problem. There's not enough representation. And now this league is 70% black with the players. There are a lot of black coaches working, and for one reason or another, they're not getting head coaching jobs. And the NFL understands it. They agree with it. Roger Goodell and his office and some key owners say, yes, it is a problem. It's okay to think that it's a problem because it is.
So let me leave you with this, and we'll break real quick. The NFL is a monopoly. We all know it. So is baseball. So is basketball and all that. Here's what's amazing. And if you're a white person, you're going to be like, I don't see this. And I guarantee you, if you're African-American, you're going to see it. Okay. Mm-hmm. We should point out that Robert Saleh is Lebanese as well. There is another non-white coach in the NFL.
And Ron Rivera,
yes.
Puerto Rican heritage.
Yes, and so there are some other coaches. So, and it's not just about it. It's non-white coaches that we're talking about. But think about this: the federal government went in and began investigating college basketball payments. You remember 3-4 years ago the big FBI deal? Mm-hmm. Why? Because young black kids, predominantly black kids, were getting money. They weren't breaking any laws. They were getting money from shoe companies to go do what they love to do and what they're really good at, right? And the federal government decided we've got to put a stop to that. Yet multi-billion dollar corporations of the National Football League are doing nothing, are firing black coaches that are having success and aren't hiring minority coaches in almost any way, shape, or form, right? Very just enough to, like, you know, save face, right? And the federal government wants no part of it. Like, if you're a young African-American kid, how do you not look at that and go, wow, this is not...
Yeah, I don't want the federal government work doing that.
My point to you is, like, the owners are empowered by forces that are much bigger than even them. Look at how this happens. Wait a minute, we've got some young kids that are getting a few grand here and there to play basketball. We got to get the FBI to investigate this. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Yet this goes on right there. I mean, like, of course the owners know they can do whatever they want to do. All right, we're way late. Bob, we'll take a break. Bob Glauber, NFL insider with us here in the program. All right, wrapping up here in the program, Bob Glauber, our NFL insider, Hall of Fame writer for the New York Newsday, great friend of the program. I know Bob and I go get all fired up about things, but Bob is the best. And love that we can have these kind of discussions, which I think are important discussions to have, and no one I'd rather have them with than Bob Glauber. Bob, real quick, do you like the Chiefs? What's your Super Bowl? Do you got Packers, Chiefs?
I do.
The Chiefs winning it all?
I had them from the start. I got Kansas City to win the Super Bowl. I got Kansas City to win this weekend. I'll say 31-17.
31-17 Chiefs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if they're going to win the Super Bowl, I got them certainly winning this weekend.
Do you what's the biggest hurdle for them? I mean, because there are multiple teams. There are three teams left that have beat them already.
Yeah. The biggest hurdles are defensive inconsistency and, I would say, running inconsistency. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, look, you know, every team is flawed in this tournament, every team. And Kansas City is in that group. So, but I think that, you know, they smelled the finish line. They did not get it done in Cincinnati. Could be a fatal mistake and problem, because they lose that number one seed, but I still think they've got the talent, and they smell the championship right now.
Yeah, I think the one thing is with having to play that round, it forces them to address that. Like, if they'd gotten by Cincinnati, they may not have had to look as hard in the mirror and go, okay, we got to change some things. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that happens for the Chiefs, that they look at it and go, okay, we got to fix a couple of things. And I do think it, you know, it may very well come down to just how well can the defense play. You know, can it play well?
Fair enough.
Yeah, Bob, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate
it.
By the way, give them the name of your book and where they buy it, real quick.
The Forgotten First. It's a story of integration in the NFL, but it addresses everything from then to now.
Yeah, Bob and Keyshawn Johnson wrote it. Great read, Bob. You're the man, buddy. We'll talk again next week.
All right, talk to you.
Bob Glauber, NFL insider from the New York Newsday. We're back at it tomorrow at 2:00.